court will proceed to the fourth case, In re Richard Sharif.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I would first like to address the authority of the bankruptcy court to render a final judgment on count five of the adversary complaint in the light of the Supreme Court's later holding in Stern versus Marshall. Count five clearly was a state court action seeking a declaration under state law that the Sodat Watar Trust was a sham. And the allegations in the complaint talked about the debtor using the trust as his own. Clearly, state court claims.
Mr. Stevens, you come to this concern about the bankruptcy judge addressing that claim kind of late in this action, don't you? It seemed to me you didn't even get to that position until your reply brief in our court.
It was certainly touched on in the jurisdictional statement in the opening brief, and we also raised it in a motion before Judge Leinenweber. It's document 28 in the appeal.
Is that your client's motion?
Yes. My client's motion for a supplemental briefing, and in that motion, we cited this court's decision in the Ortiz case and the Stern versus Marshall case. And that motion was made a few weeks after this court decided Ortiz. Now, I agree that...
You did not ask to withdraw reference of the proceeding to the district court?
No. Mr. Sharif's sister was engaged in the withdrawal litigation. She had an appeal pending before Judge Grady, and Judge Leinenweber declined to rule on the issues that she had raised before Judge Grady. But he also had he declined to withdraw the reference that his sister was seeking. But in January, right after this court decided Ortiz, that Sharif moved before Judge Leinenweber for a supplemental briefing schedule on the pending appeal. And it was in that motion that we cited both Ortiz and Stern versus Marshall. The issue was raised. Now,
Stern versus Marshall was decided some 7 or 8 months before that time, though.
Correct.
And it wasn't until this court's decision in Ortiz that the motion to supplement was filed. So the Stern versus Marshall argument was available to you at the time of the initial briefing of this matter on appeal to the district court?
Yes.
So that's the time that the Stern versus Marshall should have been raised?
I'm not. I think that since it's a jurisdictional issue, it can be raised really at any time.
Well, I guess my concern is whether you consented by inaction to be in the courts that you were in, to be in the bankruptcy court first, and then and by not raising it there, that you consented or at least forfeited any challenge you might have to the bankruptcy judge's authority.
Well, I think waiver or forfeiture implies a knowing giving up of a right, and certainly in the bankruptcy court, the bankruptcy court's decisions were made pre-Stern versus Marshall.
Right, but they were made under the regimen that still exists, that is, all matters related to bankruptcies in the Northern District of Illinois are referred to bankruptcy judges. And if one opposes that or resists that, you move to withdraw to the district court. It's laid out in both the statutes and the local rules.
Or the other alternative is to proceed by way of report and recommendation in a related case. And if the report and recommendation regime had been followed with regard to count five, the debtor would have had an opportunity to show in response to the report and recommendation that he had indeed complied with the discovery, and gone through the list of the items that were related in the what purported to be the bankruptcy court's final determination. And so I think it would make a very important procedural difference.
Well, it seems to me that Judge Leinenweber did that.
How so? I'm not following the question.
In addressing the matters before Judge Leinenweber, it seems to me that he considered those objections you had.
I think that Judge Leinenweber did not accept the argument that the debtor had a right to know where his discovery was deficient. And to demonstrate that, in fact, there had been compliance, and that's where I think the fundamental unfairness in this situation occurred. Aside from the Stern versus, I think the Stern versus Marshall issue aside, we have a situation under Rule 37 where there is supposed to be a conference to try to resolve discovery issues. And in this instance, the only conference that took place was one before there had been any compliance. Well, Mr. Sharif was in Syria, and we were not able to say when he was going to get in any discovery in. And then once he returned, he was given a week to complete all discovery. He provided substantial documentation within that week. But after that, there was no identification of any of the deficiencies that were supposed to have been supposed to have occurred. And those were sprung on us during the May hearing before Judge Cox, not before. So there was no realistic opportunity to make a cure. And we submit that Rule 37 really requires that kind of identification, especially when you're going to impose such.
Judge Leinenweber says, however, there's no dispute that Wellness Counsel conferred with Sharif's prior to filing the motion to compel.
If that was in April that he filed a blanket motion to compel. And at that point, there had been no discovery. That's true. But once there was substantial compliance, 1,500 documents, the answers to interrogatories, the document production had all been provided. There was no identification of the supposed deficiencies.
The bankruptcy court says a phone call would have been futile because the debtor was so grossly out of compliance with his discovery obligations, and Judge Leinenweber reviewed that.
But it is obvious from what was produced And what we have cited in our briefs as demonstrating the compliance that is in the record, that a phone call would have done some good because they'd either misinterpreted what had been produced or that the material was readily available. So again, the substance, the phone call would have done some good, and if you review the material that we have set forth in the briefs, and we believe that you will see that the material was available, we could have complied, and that the sanctions were extreme.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Mr. Lang?
Good morning. May it please the Court. There are a couple issues that Mr. Stevens raised, and I think the Court keyed in on. First, Stern v. Marshall came out in June, more than 6 months before it was even raised, and it wasn't raised by Mr. Stevens in this matter until the reply brief.
Is that the kind of argument that can be waived?
Yes, it is. Justice Roberts clearly states in Stern v. Marshall that
the statutory argument can be waived. He's talking about the constitutional argument.
Well, the constitutional argument, he said that the right to waive.
He didn't say anything about the constitutional argument and whether that's waivable.
Well,
he distinguished between whether the statutory structure itself about what the district court and the bankruptcy court can and can't hear as a core or non-core matter is waivable because it's not jurisdictional, but
Well, there were two issues. First, he does quote United States versus Olano, and the quote is, no procedural principle is more familiar to this court than that of a constitutional right or a right of any other sort may be forfeited by failure to make a timely assertion of the right before a tribunal having jurisdiction to determine it. In this case, there was no objection. He admitted that these proceedings were core proceedings. The alter ego claim was part of our claim to deny discharge for failure to identify and attempts to conceal an asset.
That claim didn't properly belong before the bankruptcy court in the first instance. If we waiver forfeiture aside, it seems pretty clear that an alter ego claim is of a type that implicates the Stern versus Marshall decision that the district court needs to hear, as opposed to the bankruptcy court.
The alter ego claim.
I'm not talking about the first four claims, which seems to me stand on a different footing. The alter ego claim is the kind of common law claim that was at issue in Stern versus Marshall that the bankruptcy court has no power under the Constitution to hear.
Well, the Stern v. Marshall, our position is that Stern v. Marshall went to the authority of the court to hear claims. The court has the right to hear core claims and can hear non-core claims by consent. And what Justice Roberts said was through inaction and failure to object to authority to hear a claim, a non-core claim, such as a related to claim, the party consents to the jurisdiction and authority
of the
court.
Right, and that gets you in the door under the statute. But the whole second half of the opinion and the really important part of the opinion says that even if you consent, and so you're properly in the district court under the statutory scheme, the Constitution doesn't allow it for a claim like this. And my question is whether that sort of a claim is waivable. I mean, anything can be waived, but
Are we
looking at this as a forfeited claim, a claim that was made too late?
It's all the above. He consented and admitted that it was a core claim,
Whether it's core or not. About the constitutional issue about whether an alter ego claim, which seems to me is in the nature of a fraudulent conveyance claim, it's very similar to the kind of common law claim that was at issue in Stern versus Marshall, and whether the constitutional infirmity is one that the parties can waive.
We believe that it is. Again, we didn't brief this issue because it was raised for the first time in the reply brief.
We need to answer that.
I know. No, I'm just saying I'm not prepared to answer that sitting here today because it was raised in the reply brief. We believe it is. We believe that
it was discussed in the jurisdictional section of the brief, and it was put before Judge Leinenweber. He was clearly aware of the Stern versus Marshall issue. You know, it may have come too late in the briefing, but he was clearly aware of it.
The Stern v. Marshall issue that Judge Leinenweber dealt with was Ragda Sharif Bey, who is a different party, and that opinion was not appealed?
No. Mr. Sharif raised Stern versus Marshall issue. He just did it in supplemental briefing. And Judge Leinenweber said that's too late, too bad, so sad.
Judge, he filed a motion for leave to file supplemental briefing.
Right.
And Justice or Judge Leinenweber addressed Ragda Sharif, who tried to raise a Stern v. Marshall argument as both for Mr. Sharif and for herself, and he said, you can't raise it for Mr. Sharif, but as for your claim in your separate adversary proceeding, that you have waived that claim.
That's not how I read the order. This is the last two pages of Judge Leinenweber's order where he's addressing Sharif's motion to supplement the briefing to address the Stern versus Marshall issue. He notes that the sister has this same issue in the other case, but says, as to this case, I'm not going to order supplemental briefing on Stern versus Marshall. It's too late.
Okay.
So, I mean, the issue was raised, and we've got a clear question of forfeiture or waiver, and that's the import of my question about whether this is the kind of argument that is structural or not.
Well, again, we believe that my interpretation of Stern v. Marshall is that these claims can be waived as the non-core.
Statutory claim. I mean, clearly, the Chief Justice's opinion in Stern v. Marshall said that the statutory allocation of authority between the bankruptcy court and the district court is not jurisdictional, and so it can be waived if there's an affirmative consent or consent by implication because of litigation conduct.
Right.
We may have that going on here. I'm addressing the constitutional issue and whether this is a structural error in the authority of the bankruptcy court that cannot be waived or forfeited. And obviously you're not prepared to answer
That's what I said earlier. I'm not.
Yeah, that's fine.
That, as I said,
we'll figure it out.
Well, I believe that he raised it for the first time in his reply brief, not as part of his.
And even if that were so, we have to figure it out.
No, I understand, but I'd request leave to file supplemental briefing on that issue if the court would be so inclined.
Do you want anything on that?
No,
that's all right. Thank you, Mr. Lang. Mr. Stevens?
I think that this court's decision in Ortiz tells us that the jurisdictional problem or the constitutional limitation on the bankruptcy court's authority is the kind of thing that can be raised in the course of the litigation and need not be asserted initially. I mean, I think that...
Well, actually,
you go ahead.
Ortiz addressed this from the standpoint of appellate jurisdiction because the procedural posture of that case was a direct appeal from the bankruptcy court to this court by way of certification.
Right.
So there was no intervening district court order, and the court said that under those circumstances, appellate jurisdiction is suspect because we don't have a final order because the bankruptcy court was not empowered to issue a final order based on Stern versus Marshall.
Yeah, well said. That case addresses appellate jurisdiction. But what about the authority of the bankruptcy judge here? That Judge Sykes has identified the really core problem here.
I think the starting place with the analysis is, did the bankruptcy judge have the constitutional authority? All right. Now,
or can that be waived?
and or can it be waived? But when at the time of the proceedings in the bankruptcy court, there was no awareness of the Stern versus Marshall analysis, constitutional analysis, it seems to me that the party, that we were not in a position to give up a known right. Since this is something that developed on while the case was on direct appeal, it's something that we could legitimately raise in the district court. Now, I think that that this court does have jurisdiction to say that Judge Leinenweber made a constitutional error and reverse that. Because I think that's the train of the judgments that have occurred here. But
We technically have a final order from the district court. Just your argument is that it's an improperly constituted final order because Judge Leinenweber didn't engage in a de novo consideration of the alter ego claim, but took it on review from...
He didn't consider it a de novo claim and committed error in addressing our Stern versus Marshall claim, which was presented to him.
Mr. Stevens, this line case is taken under advisement.